Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. We have a huge show for you today, so let's just get to it. So let's open the docket for July 28th, 2022. Rules for thee, but not for me. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of one of the most dangerous cities in the country, well, her motorcade has been busted for multiple speeding and traffic offenses. Now, you may say, who cares? Well, guess what? She's been pushing for harsher punishments for drivers who go too fast. Now, Lightfoot's SUVs since February of 2020 have been involved in at least 8 incidents since May of 2021, and she has received 3 speed camera tickets and 2 warnings plus a red light ticket. Now, none of the fines, which total $658 if you were me, have been paid. Now, footage shows multiple incidents involving the car. In one, the 2 Ford Expeditions SUV raced through a set of red lights with traffic cameras seen flashing in their wake. In another, a black Chevy SUV can be seen making a left turn at a red light at a large intersection. It is unclear if Lightfoot was in the SUV at the time, although she won't have been driving them in either instance, to be fair. Now, these revelations come about as Lightfoot, who took over mayor in 2019, continues to push lower the buffer zone threshold speed cameras allow before issuing a citation. It was 10 miles per hour, but she ordered it be reduced to 6 miles per hour last year, arguing that it would make the roads safer. No one likes speed cameras, I get it, she said last month, but this is life or death, and we're talking about here, and we've got to step up as a city to address this. She also repeatedly highlighted the threat to children from speeding vehicles near schools. It's unconscionable that anyone would consider voting to allow increased speed near spaces utilized by children, the mayor would say. Last week, she added, it makes no sense for us to increase the speed around the parks and schools when we know the horrific consequences for pedestrians and others as well if the speeds are increased. Now, Lightfoot's official vehicle themselves have been caught speeding through these school zones as well. In February of 2020, one of her vehicles drove past the Jones College Prep at 39 miles per hour, leading to a warning being issued. On January 21st, her SUV drove through a red light following year at 5:45 a.m. On May 20th, 2021, her 2 SUVs sped past Samuel Gophers Park at 39 miles per hour, resulting in another speed warning. And July 30th of 2021, her motorcade passed Orr Academy High School at 43 miles an hour. My God, the danger, the reckless disregard for the safety of small children everywhere. Mayor Lightfoot, the website reported that a speed camera ticket was issued and the $244 remains unpaid. Now, continuing, on October 10th of 2021, one of her vehicles turned left through a red light, resulting in the $244 ticket, which has not been paid. The following month, on November 5th, Lightfoot's SUV received a warning for traveling through Washington Park at 39 miles an hour as she was on her way to a COVID press conference at the Children's Hospital. 4 months later, on March 9th, her SUV sped past the same location, and she was sent a $70 fine, which remains unpaid, shockingly. And then last month, that's right, 41 miles an hour going through Samuel Gophers Park, the $100 ticket remains unpaid. Now, just to give a little perspective here, Chicago has issued 3.8 million speeding tickets, generating almost $80 million in revenue to the city since Lightfoot lowered the threshold to 6 miles per hour last year. Because it's always about the children, ladies and gentlemen. Whereas we say here in Crime Talk, it's always about the money. And I think the mayor was looking more at the $80 million than she was really the safety of the children, given the fact that she could reach over to her drivers and say, slow down, it's a school zone. She doesn't do that. So in true political politician doublespeak, Lightfoot's office said that the mayor herself was not responsible for the drivers and stressed repeatedly that traffic safety and the running red lights is never acceptable. And the mayor's detail is apparently responsible for the safety and security of the mayor and members of the mayor's detail are trained in a variety of safety and security techniques to keep the mayor safe. And that includes both vehicles staying in formation while en route. Lightfoot's teams also said that the fines had not been paid because there's an administrative process to review these fines, which once again is rules don't apply to us. And the payment is not collected until that process has been concluded. And obviously, you know, in the government world, it takes a year, over a year, to decide whether the mayor's detail should pay a fine. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, the mayor stressed, hey, it's not my fault. Now you may say, Scott, why are you worried about this? Well, this goes kind of to the whole general issue society's facing right now. Don't get me wrong. Stupid laws should be ignored, okay? But when the politicians are the ones that are not following the laws that they've imposed, well, it goes directly to the illegitimacy of the government. If the rules don't apply to everyone, including the government officials, they should apply to no one. Politicians have to do it cleaner and better than everyone else. They need to be held to a higher standard. Bottom line, I've stressed this many, many times. I remember when I was on active duty, when I was an enlisted guy, there are things that I could get away with for being stupid as an enlisted guy. As an officer, you are held to a higher standard. What would be something that would be a quick non-judicial punishment for an enlisted guy was something that was going to end your career as an officer because you were held to a higher standard. Politicians need to be held to a higher standard. If they can't follow that standard, they need to resign. All right. Remember to subscribe if you haven't done so already. Like the video if you do and hit that bell so you receive notifications. And remember, you can listen to Crime Talk on any of your favorite podcasting apps, including Apple, Audible, and Spotify. Now, I'm telling you, we are so close to 1 million downloads. Please give it a try. Give it a try. Next time you're going to listen to that podcast, give it a try. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked. All right, quick update. Highland Park shooter. Remember the Highland Park shooter, that Robert Bobby Cremo guy? Well, he has been officially indicted on 117 counts, including first-degree murder for the shooting 7 people dead and injuring more than 40. Now, the 21-year-old who gunned down the victims on the 4th of July parade in Illinois was charged with 21 counts of first-degree murder, which includes 3 counts for first-degree murder for each of the deceased victims. Now, you may say, Scott, how can they do that? It's called different theories of prosecution. First-degree murder, after deliberation, extreme indifference, and kind of a felony murder aspect as well. Different theories of prosecution. Obviously, if they are found guilty of all 3 of those, they would merge for sentencing. The goal here is to make sure Mr. Cremo never gets out of prison ever, ever again. Clearly, if you're going to kill 7 people, you don't deserve to walk among the free and living. Now, Mr. Cremo is also charged with 48 counts of attempted murder and 48 counts of aggravated battery with a firearm for each of the victims who was struck by a bullet. Now, his next court appearance is August 3rd. Now, there could have been even more people charged, basically could have charged extreme indifference, attempted murder for basically everybody who was on the street, but I get it. Prosecutors want to keep it simple, get the conviction, get this kid off the streets forever. All right, next on the docket, a case that was reversed, and it should have been, okay? And the judge who allowed this remote testimony should resign. And this is an example of what happens when you take shortcuts. and you ignore the Constitution and due process. An Ohio appeals court overturned the murder conviction of a woman who allegedly lured her then-husband's former girlfriend into a deadly trap. Now, the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Judicial Circuit determined that the trial court erred by letting confessed killer Chad Cobb testify remotely against defendant Erica Stefanko amid the COVID-19 pandemic. The appellate court decided that this violated Stefanko's right to confront the witness against her in court on charges she helped kill Ashley Nicole Biggs. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is basic constitutional law stuff that anyone that's ever done anything in regards to criminal law knows. You have an absolute right to confront and cross-examine your accuser in court. And it means in court. It doesn't mean via a WebEx. It doesn't mean a Zoom call. Unbelievable that a court would allow that to take place. And this is the absolute correct ruling. This is what happens when you try to ignore the Constitution. This is what happens when you try to ignore due process rights. Like, we think they're guilty. Let's just get to it. It's so much more convenient. It's supposed to be difficult, ladies and gentlemen. It's supposed to be difficult for the state. Oh, sorry for the inconvenience that you're going to have to bring somebody in during COVID. And like we mentioned the other day, excuse me, where? I've looked through the Constitution. I never saw a single exception for a pandemic under the Constitution. Not a single one. That's what happens when people get scared. People ignore the law and doesn't think that it's going to apply in matters of, what they consider to be some sort of emergency. No, those rules are there so that nobody declares an emergency just to get around the rules. Now, let's talk about Ms. Stefanko. She was convicted of aggravated murder and murder back in November of 2020, and authorities said that she called in an order to Domino's, luring pizza delivery driver and Cobb's ex-girlfriend, Ms. Biggs, to a trap where Cobb's committed the actual murder. Now, after the slain woman did not return to work, her manager called police. Officers who responded to the delivery address found it was pitch black and there were signs of a struggle, as well as a significant amount of blood in the parking lot. Now, Cobb's and Biggs shared a daughter together, but they had been going through a custody dispute. And after learning of this from the Domino's manager, police went to the home of Cobb's grandparents, where they found him crouching behind a tree in a nearby woods. A Wayne County deputy later found the murdered Biggs and her missing vehicle. Facing the death penalty, Cobb eventually pled guilty to aggravated murder and kidnapping charges. He made no deal to testify against or to implicate anyone. However, by the time he testified remotely in Stefanko's murder trial, she had moved on and married his friend Mike Stefanko. Now, Cobb's and Biggs' daughter also testified about Erica Stefanko's ordering a pizza, but details of her story conflicted with her father. And now they get to do it all over again because somebody wanted to make it convenient. It's not supposed to be convenient, ladies and gentlemen. It's supposed to be difficult for the prosecution to get convictions. And when you start violating people's constitutional rights, yeah, do over. When it's that obvious. It's a confrontation clause, ladies and gentlemen. You have a right to confront and cross-examine your accuser in court, not via video. Remember that. Next, an update on a couple of cases that we've talked about in the past week. First, a teen was accused of brutally attacking a New York Police Department cop on the subway platform, was free on bail, turned the tables and asked a judge if he could press charges against the police officer when he had court earlier this week. Now, the 16-year-old, who isn't being named due to his age, asked the judge a question during his court appearance in Manhattan, but didn't specify whom he'd like to file those charges against, but obviously it's against the police officer. His subsequent response to a question about what accusations he'd like to make was inaudible. In Tuesday's court hearing, teen responded, "Yes, Your Honor," to every question he was previously asked. And the New York City mayor, Eric Adams, said the decision to free the boy on bail yet again had reduced the Big Apple to a national laughingstock thanks to the lax bail laws that prioritize the well-being of suspects over crime victims. Now, the boy has now been released to a family center in Brooklyn, although he will be free to roam during the day and summons back each night before a curfew. Now, the footage shows the 16-year-old punching this cop in the head before grabbing him around the neck and slamming him repeatedly into the metal railings. And this all took place last Saturday. The teen was previously arrested for possession of a loaded gun and robbery last Wednesday, but was released the next day after appearing in court. Now, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office requested he be released with intensive community monitoring, even after being accused of robbing a 49-year-old man of his cell phone with three other accomplices. Such a nice kid. That was the same intensive community monitoring he had been placed under between his alleged mugging attack and his alleged attack on the cop. But the DA is asking for that, ladies and gentlemen. The DA. Remember that. Mayor Adams said, "This person was arrested for a robbery a few days ago, and now he's back. As soon as we catch them, the system releases them, and they repeat the action. When I say we're the laughingstock of the country, this is what I'm talking about," the mayor continued, calling the act issue just a total disregard for public safety. And the boy was released without bail again on Sunday after the subway incident, and the case was transferred to family court because he's a juvenile. He doesn't deserve any punishment. He only assaults police officers. Come on, ladies and gentlemen. But don't worry, he'll at least be in by 6 p.m. So at least somebody gets it in the government there in New York that, yes, New York, you are becoming the laughingstock, possibly followed by a close second, maybe even coming up when it comes to L.A. or just generally California. Yeah, you just look bad. You look bad. It's unsafe. All right. Well, remember that case about the newlyweds going down to the South Pacific for their honeymoon, which didn't turn out so well? Well, the body of the newlywed pharmacist who was found beaten to death of a luxury honeymoon bungalow in Fiji was so badly injured that it could not be embalmed and had to be cremated before her parents could take her home to the United States. Now, the woman from Memphis, Christy Chen, was found dead on July 9th at the secluded $3,500 a night Turtle Island Resort. She and her husband, Bradley Robert Dawson, who she married in February, had only checked into the resort 2 days earlier. The couple married after a whirlwind romance in February, 3 months after they first met, and her parents paid for the honeymoon. Now, Chen was found bloodied on the bathroom floor of the bungalow. She had suffered multiple traumatic injuries to her body and blunt force trauma to the head, according to the autopsy. Now, Mr. Dawson appeared at the court on Tuesday evening clutching a small blue suitcase in anticipation of a bail hearing. However, the date was rescheduled to August 18th, and he has maintained that Chen's death was an accident. And as we noted before, that's right, he paddled away a mile and a half away searching for help. Now, the attorneys for the family are already looking at ways to try and sue the resort because obviously it is the resort's fault because the resort should be responsible for the criminal acts of someone in their hotel room at night when the doors are closed, when they expect their privacy. Yep, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Maybe I'm just getting a little too cynical for this lawyer stuff. I don't know. All right, remember the other story we brought you about the woman who shot her husband? Well, here's an update. That retired Baltimore police officer shot by his wife last week at a DC hotel after she accused him of molesting children at her daycare center, he's been charged with 13 counts related to those accusations. James Weems is charged with sexually abusing at least three children while working at a daycare facility. Now, the Baltimore County Police said that Weems, who retired from the Baltimore City Police in 2005, has been charged with three counts, each of sexual abuse involving a minor, third-degree sexual offense, second-degree sexual offense, and a fourth-degree sexual offense, and an additional charge of displaying obscene material to a minor. A spokesperson for the police department said that additional charges may be filed as well. Authorities issued a warrant for Mr. Weems on Monday, and the police arrested him in Washington at the hospital where he's being treated for gunshot wounds. He's in custody in the hospital pending extradition from Washington, D.C. His wounds are not life-threatening. Now, Mr. Weems' wife, 50-year-old Shatira Weems is in jail in D.C., charged with assault with intent to kill and several gun charges. It's alleged that Mrs. Weems allegedly confronted her husband over the child molestation allegations at the Mandarin Oriental Hotel on Thursday night of last week. The pair argued, the argument escalated, and she reportedly shot him in the head and the leg. I know you can't, you got to give him the due process, and then you shoot him in the head and the leg, right? Isn't that the way it works? No, he can't do that either, I guess. But you know what? Sounds like he maybe had it coming, so to speak. All right, another update. The former Minneapolis police officers, Alexander Koenig and Tao Tao, were sentenced by United States District Court Judge Paul Magnuson in back-to-back hearings. Now, Magnuson, who noted that Koenig was the rookie cop at the time of Mr. George Floyd's death, sentenced him to serve 3 years in federal prison, followed by 2 years of supervised release. In a separate hearing, the judge sentenced Tao, who had been a 9-year veteran of the Minneapolis Police Department at the time of Mr. Floyd's death, to 3.5 years in prison, followed by 2 years of supervised release. Now, prior to Mr. Koenig being sentenced, Mr. Floyd's cousin, Sabrina Montgomery, and his girlfriend, Courtney Ross, gave victim impact statements. Ross addressed Koenig's directly with compassion. This sentence will not define you, and I urge him to define your purpose. Now, this does not mean you can't find your footing to stand up for what is right, Ross told Mr. Koenig. Now, Montgomery asked Magnuson, the judge, to give both Koenig and Tao the maximum sentence. All of these men deserve to serve longer sentences, Mr. Montgomery said. The system these officers operated in is flawed. But again, where is their humanity? The length of the sentence of Koenig and Tao are lower than those recommended by the federal sentencing guidelines, which called for a 4.5 to 5 year sentence. And the facts of this case do not amount to second-degree murder under federal law, the judge wrote in a ruling last week. And defendants Koenig and Tao each made a tragic misdiagnosis in their assessment of Mr. Floyd. That they did. Well, hopefully this will bring just about the end of the George Floyd legal matters. As we know, the guy that was really responsible for this matter, Derek Chauvin, has been sentenced in both state and federal court. And the fact that he's pled guilty in federal court for violating Mr. Floyd's constitutional rights means that his chances of winning anything on appeal are about slim to none. Here's a bit of a case of oops. Thinking that the house belonged to her ex-boyfriend, a jilted lover, allegedly set fire to a home in Gold Hill, North Carolina. The big oops was it turned out to be the wrong address. Now, the arson report from the Rowan County Sheriff's Office regarding the July 22nd fire, which led to the arrest of Christy Louise Jones, indicates that the fire caused $20,000 in damages, and Jones has been charged with felony first-degree arson, assault with a deadly weapon, and larceny of an animal. She is being held on a $101,000 bond. Now, the arson reports indicates that the fire was started shortly before 7:30 a.m. A neighbor who saw Jones trying to set the house on fire woke up the owners of the home. The owner went outside to find bundles of wood and a fire on his front porch, which was apparently set with some chainsaw oil. Now, trying to stop the fire spread, the homeowner ran to get his hose, but according to the arrest report, Jones had plugged up the end of the hose with Flex Seal, a rubberized liquid that would cause it not to let the water. She thought of everything. The arrest report states that the homeowner saw Jones nearby, grabbed a rifle, and confronted her. Now, according to the report, Jones mumbled at the man while allegedly holding one of the homeowner's dogs on a leash. Police allege Jones also tried to set the propane tank on the side of the home on fire. Later, deputies found a cut to the exterior of the homeowner's above-ground pool, and as the sound of the approaching police cars and fire trucks got closer, Jones allegedly ran to her car and fled, but not before the homeowner's got the license plate number. Later, police tracked her to her home, where she was handcuffed. Now, according to a witness, informed deputies of a former boyfriend, Jones did own the property in the area. Jones and the owner of the home that was torched do not know one another. Jones has yet to enter a plea to charges at this time. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. A Florida man is behind bars on DUI charges for allegedly drunk driving a motorized scooter inside Walmart, where he nearly struck shoppers and crashed into shelves and merchandise displays, all according to a police report. Now, who is this reckless driver? Aaron Gregory. Now, he was busted about 10 a.m. on Sunday inside the Walmart in Melbourne, Florida, which is about 65 miles south of Orlando. Officers were summoned to the store, referenced to an intoxicated male on a motorized scooter, and Walmart security officials told police that Mr. Gregory was haphazardly driving a Walmart scooter down the aisle, running into shelves and displays, and creating a danger for other patrons and potentially striking many of them with the scooter. Gregory was reportedly so intoxicated that he was barely able to stand on his own and had to be transported from the store on a stretcher. Apparently, Mr. Gregory's backpack, which was in the scooter basket, contained an open bottle of Smirnoff vodka. Fortunately, store security camera got the swerving, running into items, and nodding off while driving the scooter. Now, Gregory was charged with four misdemeanors, including driving under the influence, disorderly intoxication, and possession of an open container of alcohol. He is being held in the Brevard County Jail on a $3,000 bond. Now, according to the Florida criminal statutes, the Walmart scooter, which tops out at 10 miles per hour, is considered a motor vehicle. Now, no word on whether Mr. Gregory actually needed the scooter because of some sort of disability or if he was just on a joyride. All right, that was a big docket for you today. I hope you enjoyed it. Let's go ahead and close the record. We will see you next time on Crime Talk. There goes Frank.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
I was like, he forgot. I'm like, he's just walking.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's all good.